Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 243 in fine podcast tradition. I probably just butchered that Japanese word, but we are back for one time only. Not saying we're back on a weekly basis or even a monthly basis, but recent developments have spurred me out of podcast retirement. So we're back here with episode number 243. Of course, I believe the guest here, I'm almost positive, I should have looked this up first, I think you were on the last episode.
If the last episode was the year-end awards episode, then yes.
It's amazing. I did not do that on purpose. I just thought of that right now as I was about to introduce you. I'm like, okay, you were on the 2021 year-end awards episode, which ended up being the last episode we did. And, you know, before this hiatus that's obviously gone on for 11 months now. And I never even said goodbye on the podcast. Like, there's probably people who never checked my Twitter feed or the podcast Twitter feed who have no idea that I just put the podcast on hiatus. But yeah, hello to those people. Welcome back to the show. Yes, the podcast has been on hiatus for the last 11 months, obviously. It's just been I haven't been into a lot of wrestling in the last, you know, in 2022. I think a lot of that is probably because, you know, Japanese wrestling has been very clap crowd heavy. I just kind of reached my limit with that. So yeah, I've just been watching. I've really only been watching two promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and All Elite Wrestling. And it seemed kind of, against the theme of the show to continue if I without watching all these other promotions I used to watch, I guess. So that is the long-winded way of saying why there hasn't been another Wrestling Omakase this year. But again, recent developments have made me want to come back here and record an episode. And my guest here was gracious enough to do it, even though I asked him to do it like probably, what, like 10 minutes before we just started recording?
Yes, 15 minutes ago from this particular second in time.
But, I mean, the short story there is I thought I had an episode or a guest appearance lined up to discuss this stuff. And then it kind of fell through because of scheduling issues. So I figured, what the fuck? I mean, like you just said off the air, I do have a podcast to discuss this on. It's called Wrestling Omakase. And I could think of no better guest than this for you than you, because we're going to troll some people here. That's the main the main goal of this episode. But yeah, so we're here to talk about the 2022 Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. Mongo, are you a voter? I don't know this. Whether or not
I am not a voter. I am shocked that I'm not a voter, since the voting base now like encompasses like everyone on the planet. But I am not a voter. I'm only a voter in the much more prestigious Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year poll.
That is true. So this was my first year as a voter. This was the first time I had a ballot, which is again funny. I shut down my podcast, and then Dave finally replies to one of my emails sending him all the Observer Hall of Fame articles I've ever written, like, can I have a ballot? And he was like, which is okay. Do you know how many people have tried to get me an Observer Hall of Fame ballot? I'm not saying this is some kind of brag. I'm saying this is like how funny it is and like how random it is when he finally gives one to you. I have heard from at least a dozen people who are voters who recommended me to get a Hall of Fame ballot over the years, like probably over the last 5 years. At least a dozen people. I'm probably forgetting some. And Dave never did it. So I was like, you know, does Dave Meltzer have some weird issue with me? Did I say something on Twitter that really pissed him off or something? And no, the answer was far more mundane. It's that these people emailed him at the wrong time or something when he wasn't thinking about it. And I happened to email him this year at the right time, you know, in like September when he was getting ready to compile the voters. And I was like, hey, Dave, you know, other people have, you know, tried to put in a good word for me to get a ballot before. But, you know, I've written a bunch of articles on the Voice of Wrestling Observer. I mean, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame on Voices of Wrestling. So, you know, I would love to be considered for a ballot. And he just replies back like it was something like one line. It was like, email me next month and remind me to give you a ballot. And that's what I did. I emailed again in October and I got a ballot. So that's the very boring story of how I got a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame ballot.
It's funny how everything in the Observer universe works basically like that, because before AEW and when they would do like mailbag heavy shows on Wednesday, people would complain that they would keep sending in questions and they'd never get answered. And the secret to getting your question answered was to email them at like midnight Eastern time. So like an hour or two before they recorded. And Brian would only look at like the top five or six messages in his inbox. And so whenever I had a goofy question that I wanted answered, like, did the Sergeant Slaughter versus Bigfoot the Monster Truck Tug of War arena shows draw? Whenever I wanted one of those answered, I'd just send it in at midnight on a Wednesday and it'd get answered. The answer was no, they did not draw.
But yeah, so it's kind of funny how that's how it works for pretty much everything related to Observer. But the Observer Hall of Fame, you know, I mean, wrestlers do vote on it, right? I mean, real wrestlers do vote on it. Real active wrestlers, I should say. Retired wrestlers vote on it. Historians vote on it. I'm sure I'm in the quote-unquote reporters category that ended up putting one Tetsuya Naito over the top, as we'll get to. But the Observer Hall of Fame class 2022, that's what we're here to talk about. I'm just going to quickly read off who got in here and their percentages. And then obviously there's one guy in particular I want to talk about, and really another guy too, because he also got targeted for some weird amount of online hate this week. But the people who got in this year were the Holy Demon Army, Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada. They had 76% of the votes. You need at least 60% of the voters in your region. Keep that in mind. That's important for later. You need 60% of the voters in your region to go into the Observer Hall of Fame. So yes, Taue and Kawada got in their very first year on the ballot. Taue had been on the ballot by himself for a long time, was never able to get in. I definitely would have been a Taue voter if, you know, I had a ballot before this year. But I did not vote for Holy Demon Army, mostly out of, mostly because I figured they were going to get in anyway, but also because I just didn't like Dave adding like 500 tag teams all to one ballot. So I kind of didn't vote for any of them as like a little, my own little protest. But anyway, so that was Holy Demon Army. They got in without my vote anyway. Mystico, he received 76% of the vote in the Mexico region. This is obviously is the original Mystico, the guy who again is Mystico once again. You know, he's got that gimmick back. But yeah, he has 76% of the vote. Only 74 votes compared to 148 votes for the Holy Demon Army, which again shows you the difference in, you know, who votes in what category. But it not a big surprise he got in because he got 59.7% in 2021. So obviously was just barely under the 60% threshold.
There's something funny about that vote total, actually. So Mystico got the same exact number of raw votes this year and last year, but less people voted in Mexico this year. So Mystico got in.
Exactly. I mean, I definitely would have voted for him if I, so I only voted in my first year in the Japan and modern US Canada categories. I don't think I follow Lucha enough to, you know, be any kind of Lucha expert. So I didn't really feel comfortable voting in that category, even though, because basically the way it works to, again, for people who don't know, if you vote for, like, let's say I feel strongly about Mystico and I want Mystico to get into the Hall of Fame. So I vote for him. If I only vote for Mystico, it's essentially voting against everybody else in Mexico, since I'm now raising the threshold for everybody else to get in. So it just seems fucking stupid to me to vote in a category where I don't really know that much about. So I stayed out of Mexico. I stayed out of the Europe / rest of the world. And I stayed out of historical too, even though historical US Canada, I should say, even though I feel like I probably, you know, I know like the 80s guys well enough, right? That are in the historical cutoff now, I think is 1992. Is it 92 now and it's going to go up to 93 next year? That sounds right.
Yeah, I think so, because JYD's going historical next year. So
basically, I feel, you know, I know those 80s guys, if that wouldn't be a big deal. But, like, I don't know anything about guys from, like, the 70s or 60s. And, you know, I just felt like it would have been stupid for me to vote in that category. There was actually an interesting proposal in the Discord, in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, to sort of break up the historical into, like, you know, into two categories where you have like a really historical and like a quasi historical. I think he had better names than that for it, but you know, if that was the case, if there was like a separate category for the 80s guys up to like the early 90s, I would vote in that category. I just don't feel comfortable voting for these, you know, really old people that were active before I was born. So, but yeah, the next guy who got in, Kota Ibushi, with 65% of the vote. Again, not a huge jump for him. He had 54% last year. I'll get into why I think the psychology of him going in probably worked out for him. Him and the other guy from Japan who got in this year, I think they had almost the exact opposite things working for them. But not a huge jump for Ibushi, and not, I guess, that surprising he got in. The big shocker was Tetsuya Naito, who had 65% of the vote and got into the Hall of Fame just because he only had 38% last year. So, you know, almost the exact same votes for Ibushi and Naito. Ibushi had 128 and Naito had 127. And it turns out their voter base was very different, as we can get into a little bit later. But yeah, so Naito gets in, and that's, as you can probably guess, that's mostly why I'm here recording this, but we'll get to that. Then Los Villanos, help me out here.
Oh my God, I can pronounce this in my head every time. Villanos,
there we go. They got 63%. It was their first year. And then after that, we had Rollerball Mark Rocco, who got in with 62%. Again, not a big jump for him. He had 58% in the previous year. Some people who were close. The one that really made people upset was Argentina Roca and Miguel Perez. You know, historical category, a historical tag team that probably should have gotten in. They got 57%, so I'm sure they'll probably get in next year. Sergeant Slaughter got 57%, slightly down from 59%. You know, not a ton of jumps here. I mean, Rick and Scott Steiner had probably one of the bigger jumps. They went from 40 to 52. Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful, he went from 35% to 50% this year. So he was a big jump as well. I know Joe Lanza was really pushing for him on his podcast. And CM Punk had a jump from 33% to 41%. And we'll get to him in a little bit. But the main thing I want to talk about here is Naito and Ibushi getting in. I'm sure that will shock people. But it caused a very interesting reaction on Twitter. And I'm sure you saw this as well, Mongo. Certain people on Twitter were very upset that Tetsuya Naito and Kota Ibushi got into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, and one Chick Magnet Punk did not get into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. Now, again, I am a voter as of this year. I voted for all three of these people. Okay, I voted for Naito, I voted for Ibushi, and I voted for the Chick Magnet Punk. I might as well just mention who else I voted for in general. So I have my entire ballot here. Again, I only voted in two of these categories, but I voted in the Japan category for Naito, Ibushi. I voted for Shima, who I believe he was up as well. Yes, he was. He was up.
Maybe barely? It was actually a good jump.
Yeah, good jump. 23% to 34%. I voted for Meiko Satomura. She was up, I think, around 20%. Where the hell is she? Oh, okay. She was at 18%. So up a little bit from 16%. And the last person I voted for was actually Naomichi Marufuji, who unfortunately did not have a jump at all. You know, he actually finished under 10%. So he will be off the ballot as of next year. I actually don't know if he, if this was his first year being of eligibility or if he had previously been on. I feel like he was previously on, right?
I honestly don't remember. Yeah. I feel like this was his first year, but
yeah.
It's like I used to like really religiously pay attention to the Observer Hall of Fame and get into all the big arguments and everything. And then when Sting got in, I was like, anyone can kind of get in. So why am I putting this much effort in? And I love Sting. Like, Sting is my favorite wrestler. But for whatever reason, I was like, he's my favorite wrestler. I don't really think he's a Hall of Famer at that point. Obviously now, 100% a Hall of Famer. Best 2-year streak of his career. But I used to like, yeah, I would know that in a second. Oh, yeah, no, this was his first time in the ballot, blah, blah, blah. Now I'm just like, you know, I pay attention when it comes around. I'm not going to get into these giant arguments over why Kota Ibushi and Tetsuya Naito should not be in the Hall of Fame, but CM Punk should be.
So, yeah, that's who I voted for in the Japan category. In the U.S., I voted for Bill Goldberg, Matt and Jeff Hardy, Roman Reigns, Rick and Scott Steiner, and CM Punk. Those are my five. So if you want to, a lot of people on the Discord kind of took me to task a little bit for voting for Roman. I think it's a very defensible vote. I don't blame anybody who doesn't have men. You know, I just think as far as like doing the best you can in that environment, he's probably doing as best as he can between his in-ring work as a face and now his character work as a heel. I think he just barely gets over the line for me in a way that like Randy Orton doesn't. But you know, if I'm gonna defend like the merch sales of Tetsuya Naito as a reason why he deserves to be a Hall of Famer, I can't really overlook the fact that, you know, Roman and the Bloodline seem to be gigantic merch sellers as well. But yeah, I mean, that's my U.S. ballot, and it doesn't seem like any of those people really came that close to getting in, right? Punk, like I said, was at 41%. I should have done research this before the podcast, but very last minute, folks. Roman in his first year, 31%. Okay, I could see him getting in. I think he probably will eventually get in.
Yeah, unless he goes so part-time that he's just barely around. Yeah. Like, if he has like a... If what I think will happen happens, and they get to WrestleMania, they have him beat The Rock, or The Rock isn't there, and they have him beat Cody or whatever, and they're like, well, let's have him hold the belt a little bit longer. They'll get to the fall, and they're like, well, we can't have him lose now. Let's have him lose at WrestleMania. And, you know, he'll have like a 3.5-year title reign at that point. And I think people will be like, yeah. You know, I could see him being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. So I have the Steiner brothers did a lot better than I thought. They were at 52%. I think I may have already said that, actually. But 52%, up from 40% last year. So they seem to be on the trajectory. The Hardys were at 30%, which was also up from 24% last year. Goldberg is the one that surprised me. He's only at 20%, which is barely up from last year, 18%. So the current WWE run not really helping him too much. And I think that's everybody I said I voted for. But yeah, so Naito and Ibushi getting in, and CM Punk not getting in. That to me was, you know, this big story on Twitter the day the results came out. And there were some very upset people, I will say. Seemingly mostly from the British Isles, do you want to say? Is that offensive to Irish people? The Irish blood English heart posters, is that the stuff?
Oh, they're gonna cancel you for Morrissey references now that...
That's true, he is awful. But yeah, I mean, they seem to really be upset with Naito and Ibushi getting in and Punk not getting in. Now, there's a few things I want to say about this. First of all, if you were paying attention to what I talked about how you get into the Observer Hall of Fame, it, like, even getting mad that two wrestlers got in the Japan category and a wrestler did not get in the America category really doesn't make any fucking sense, because unless you're voting in every single category, and because there is a limit for the that you can vote for in every category. I think it's 18 candidates, not counting non-wrestlers. So if you're voting in every single category, I guess there is, you know, a scenario where you can only pick one of Punk or Naito or Punk or Ibushi. But for the most part, the limit that most people are worried about, because I feel like most people don't vote in every category. Most of the public ballots I see, you know, people do not vote in either, you know, historical or Europe / Oceania or something. So they usually are not worried about hitting that 18 person limit overall. What they're worried about hitting usually is the 5 person per category. So you have a limit of 5 per category. And again, unless you're voting in every single category, there's no, like, whether or not you vote for Naito and Ibushi has nothing to do with whether or not you vote for CM Punk. And if somebody votes just in the Japan category, which again, I know people who do that, they literally had nothing to do with whether or not CM Punk got in. Their vote for Punk, they didn't vote against Punk by not voting for him because they did not vote in the modern US and Canada category. So, like, complaining about Naito and Punk getting, or Naito and Ibushi getting in and Punk not getting in, just, like, I don't know if you're just ignorant about how the Observer Hall of Fame works, which maybe that's, you know, maybe many people don't understand how it works. It is maybe a little needlessly complicated, but, you know, it could be just ignorance, or it could be one of these things where you're being, you know, you're like getting yourself angry for no fucking reason, or, you know, conveniently ignoring the actual facts of how the Observer Hall of Fame works because you want to be pissed off about Naito and Ibushi getting in before Punk, when really they have very little to do with each other. Is that fair to say? I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I mean, you have... Not just the division in your ballot. I think if you want to be mad at CM Punk not getting in, you can be mad at, like, how much the voter base has expanded and, like, try to claim that for whatever reason that they would be biased against CM Punk for some reason. But I think at this point, like, the massive additions you've had to the voter base in the last, like, 3 years would be much more amenable to voting for Punk than the voter base of like 5 or 6 years ago. So yeah. I think that's like a silly argument even there. Like, unless you want to believe that it's literally all like fans of the Elite who all got ballots and all decided that they hate CM Punk now.
Well, okay, I'm glad you brought that up because that is one of the funniest parts of this. They also complained a lot about Elite fans and like, oh, you know, you can't, you know, you can kill your family, but you can't, punch the Elite or whatever. Of course, because Benoit didn't get voted out like, you know, 14 years ago, whatever the fuck it was. First of all, if you go through, because Dave Meltzer prints this, he prints a ranking of how each person did with each category. So in reporters, CM Punk finished 17th. Doesn't sound that high, right? In the historian category, he did not finish in the top 30 at all. In the retired pro wrestler category, he, again, did not finish in the top 30 at all. In the active wrestler category, he finished tied for 27th. So who the fuck voted against CM Punk? It wasn't reporters who, again, ranked him 17th, which is not super high, but is higher than the other categories did. The people who didn't vote for CM Punk were historians, were active wrestlers, and were retired wrestlers. Those are the people who decided they did not want CM Punk in this Hall of Fame. So when you break it down like that, it's very obvious that what hurt CM Punk, you know, who CM Punk hurt himself with was people who, you know, are not like these elite fanboys who got these ballots in the reporter category. He pissed off some active wrestlers. He pissed off some retired wrestlers in the same way that Shawn Michaels couldn't get into the Hall of Fame in the early 2000s until he finally broke through by, you know, acting the way he did in the whole brawl out situation, which I'm not here to litigate anyway. I don't really care. I don't really have any dog in that fight. That's not really a big deal to me. But, you know, the reporters still put him 17th. I mean, the reporters voted for him more than the other three categories. So that, you know, that entire narrative around Punk doesn't actually hold any water. You know, to break it down a little bit more, yes, the reporters did vote overwhelmingly for Naito. I mean, that's why he got in. He was first among reporters, and Ibushi was fourth. You know, the historians of the retired wrestlers, as Dave kind of talked about in the newsletter, they kind of tended to vote for both of them, or neither of them. Like, the historians had Ibushi and Naito tied for 12th. I think historian in Dave speak, by the way, just means, like, really old people, right, that aren't wrestlers. You know, that's kind of how I understood it.
The categories are, like, kind of tenuous. Like, it's hard to figure out how certain people who are voters like fit into whatever category, but like historian theoretically is someone like Matt Farmer or Carl Stern, who are like actual historians in whatever like sense a wrestling historian could be, where they study the history of wrestling and they like catalog stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen like some breakdowns too, though. It seems like some of them are just like really old people.
But a lot of them are like, but like, yeah. I think theoretically you're like looking at like someone like Carl Stern, or maybe even like you could look at someone like Mookie before he started working for AEW, like someone who like studies the history of the business.
But yeah, so Naito and Ibushi, same thing among retired pros. They were both tied for 19th. Active pros was the only category where they kind of, you know, went in different directions, where Ibushi was fifth among active pros, but Naito was only 18th. You know, reporters, Naito, like I said, was first, and Ibushi was fourth. So, you know, when you look at that breakdown, it is reporters that came in strong for Naito, which, again, is very funny if you believe this narrative of, like, well, all the people that Dave gave ballots to are AEW and Elite fanboys who, you know, are just, like, going to vote for whatever Dave wants. Anyone who actually like paid attention during the New Japan peak could tell you that like Naito and Elite/Kenny Omega fanboys like kind of fucking hate each other. Like, there was a lot of animosity there between those two sides. So again, that also makes that entire narrative very funny. But yeah, so these people, despite all available evidence and all available facts, were very mad that Naito and Ibushi got in and CM Punk did not. And again, go ahead.
Oh, what just made this funny, so funny, is something we've kind of already touched on, is they were talking about the Benoit stuff, and there are so many Benoit tweets of like, oh, wow, you know, I guess murdering your family isn't as bad as punching the Elite, or what, just those kind of tweets. And I'm reading those, you know, Friday morning. And I'm like, God, like, this is just such a silly bad faith argument. Like, how bad did Punk even do? And but I like hadn't opened the issue yet. I was, you know, going to have to spend the afternoon like on the road for work and just doing all this other stuff. I was like, I'll look at it later. And then I just see someone reply to a tweet with like, Punk's vote went up like 8% from last year. And it's just like, really? So we're mad that he's being punished by these voters who actually voted for more this year than last year. Okay.
Yeah, I guess the devil's advocate argument would be like, well, his vote share should have gone up because his AEW work was so great, which I wouldn't even disagree with. His AEW work was great, but like, how the fuck do you know? It's like they talk like they have the authority of someone who like just came back from an alternate dimension where Brawl Out didn't happen, and they're like, well, he definitely got 60% in this alternate dimension. So it's like, maybe this was all he was ever going to go up this year. Maybe people just wanted to give it more space before they decide, you know, that this AEW run put him over the top. Again, I voted for him, so I don't know why the people who didn't vote for him didn't vote for Punk. But it's just very funny to me that people have just decided that Brawl Out was definitely why he didn't get in. Maybe it's because the guy got injured like 5 times during the year and, you know, didn't actually wrestle all that much. I don't know. I can't really get in the minds of the no voters, but it's not necessarily just because of Brawl Out.
I think the big thing with Punk, especially when you look at what happened to his vote last year, I mean, he went from 15% to 33% last year, which is a big jump. And if you look at the voting period, that encompasses his two or maybe three most impressive numbers in AEW, which is almost selling out the United Center when he wasn't even advertised to be there, which was incredible, doing that huge number, and then 200,000 plus buys for All Out, which again, that jumped him from someone that was on the, you know, on the bubble of getting kicked off the ballot before he returned to AEW to someone who legitimately you could see, okay, you know, next year he could be in that 40 or 50% club where, you know, with a big run, like he could really make it in. And he ended up with a smaller than you might expect increase, but also, you know, the Full Gear and Revolution numbers were very, very good. Double or Nothing when he won the title. It was up from the year before Double or Nothing. But, you know, if you had told me that around All Out that CM Punk's going to win the title at Double or Nothing and that pay-per-view number is going to be lower than Full Gear and Revolution, I'd be like, well, you know, that's a little disappointing. I would think that if he's going to win the title that you would be a little bit up from Revolution or Full Gear. And again, Full Gear did have a big title match on it with Omega versus Hangman, and Revolution did have the big dog collar match. And I think people don't give Adam Cole credit for having like a fan base too, but like, still, I'd be like, yeah, you know, okay, that maybe there's a little bit of a decline here. And then he leaves, he gets injured and he's gone for the summer and AEW's ratings go down. And I'm like, okay, like you can really feel the effect of Punk here. And like, I know he's going to be back at All Out and we're going to really just see like how big of a deal Punk is, because they're going to go from like a 0.32 demo to back to a 0.4 where they were, maybe even higher, because maybe Punk comes back hotter than ever. He comes back and they do like a 0.33, and then they do the Moxley match and they do a 0.36. And then, you know, they were basically, you know, for the Brawl Out fallout on that week, they were like, what, at another 0.36? So even with all of that attention, like people wondering what's happening, what's the fallout going to be, you know, the last number we can look at in terms of Punk's impact on AEW, and, you know, it was lower than before he left when they were, you know, they were doing pretty well. So it's in the end, they're kind of back. Yeah. He cooled off, or people just, I don't know, held the injury against him, whatever. I have no idea, but he just wasn't as hot as he was a year before. And you would think that winning the title and then being gone for 2 months would have people really excited for him to return, because I was excited for him to return. Yeah. And it didn't. So I think you can look at that and be like, yeah, you know, he was someone who wasn't on a lot of Hall of Fame ballots before then. He was, you know, he got 33% of the vote. So, you know, he needs another 27% to get in. And if I'm one of those stingier voters, I might be like, yeah, you know, he had an impressive first 6 months of the year, and then not so much after that. Like, and now, you know, the company definitely is in a worse place because of what happened at All Out, where they had to completely restructure everything. And, you know, total, like, huge stables were completely rebooked, and the entire title scene was rebooked, and all this stuff happened. And you might be like, well, if this guy hadn't done that, then this company might be in a better place right now. Which, if you're gonna like look at the theoretical world where that fight doesn't happen and Punk gets in, you have to look at the real world where the fight did happen, plans changed, and the company isn't quite as well off. And you didn't see the big rebound when Punk came back, so you can't be like, well, if Punk were here, things would be great. Well, all we can look at is, well, things aren't that great, and everything had to change because of Punk.
Yeah. So that's all. Those are all great points about Punk. And I just, you know, I don't know, like the fact, like the reaction versus what vote share he actually got seemed really out of whack to me. But what I want to talk about now, obviously, is Naito and Ibushi getting in, and some of the fucking tweets and some of the reaction I saw about that, and especially about Naito, because I have a lot to say about that. So for the longest time, I was shocked that Tetsuya Naito could not get into this Hall of Fame. I thought he was one of the easiest, most slam dunk candidates, you know, in the history of this Hall of Fame ballot when it came to, because like the way, if you really break it down with Naito, and you really break it down with New Japan, the only argument you had against him, if you really, you know, want to like hold it against him, is like a lack of, you know, longevity on top. And even then, I feel like it's very, you know, it got that argument got more and more, you know, false as the years went on. But when you break down what he did for business and what he did as a top star, it became more and more ridiculous that he was not getting into the Hall of Fame. So entering this year, I thought he had a decent chance to get in. You know, Okada went in last year, so I feel like held down his vote total a little bit, where I think, like, you know, some people probably just didn't want to vote for, you know, two modern New Japan guys. And obviously, you know, Kazuchika Okada is, you know, an amazing candidate. I would never say he isn't. He got him with 92% of the vote last year. Made perfect sense. So I figured with that kind of blockade, you know, gone from being above Naito, so to speak, and Ibushi, I thought he had a good, decent chance to get in. And, you know, obviously he did get in. What I did not see coming is that people would be mad about it. I just really did not see that coming. But I guess I should have, because what it really comes down to is that people hate Tetsuya Naito fans, okay? I mean, one idiot on Twitter, who I'm not going to bother naming, really went so far as to tell you that's why he was mad that Naito got in. I mean, he actually just flat out said that he, you know, hates Naito fans, and he said they are the worst people on earth and don't deserve to be happy. So that's why he was angry that Naito got in. Which is, by the way, is a very funny thing to say on a day where they quite literally are happy, because he did get into the Hall of Fame. So all you're really saying is basically, these people are happy and I'm mad about it, which is quite a funny thing to just admit publicly on Twitter. But, you know, it got to a point with so many people complaining that I saw lots of Naito fans who were like, I didn't really care about the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, but just the fact that it made people so mad that Naito got in is awesome. But yeah, so he gets into the Hall of Fame. What I think, here's where I think, you know, why I think people get so mad at Naito fans, and especially the Naito and this works actually for Naito and Ibushi, you know, versus Punk. There's a certain kind of straight, white, cis wrestling fan who does not think of themselves as being part of stan culture. Okay. When they describe themselves, they would not describe themselves as a CM Punk stan, because stans are something that other people, you know, stans are, you know, women or queer people, LGBTQ people, or, you know, younger people, or just these weird people that they don't associate with themselves. I saw another tweet that, like, compared, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's fine to be a stan of Naito, but, you know, you have to admit that you're, like, Liv Morgan stans, and the rest of us don't see him as a Hall of Famer. Which, another fucking stupid tweet, because, first of all, most people do see him as a Hall of Famer. That's why the fuck he got voted into the Hall of Fame. But, anyway, so these people think of stans as something that's not them. The other people are stans, we're not stans. When, obviously, based on the reaction and the level of the vitriol, like, you fucking are CM Punk stans. I'm sorry. That is what you are. You're because you're in this box where you've told yourself that you're, like, objective and the only people on earth who, you know, aren't biased or aren't part of stan culture, you've convinced yourselves you're something that you aren't CM Punk stans when you very clearly are CM Punk stans. If you weren't CM Punk stans, you wouldn't be this mad about him not getting in to a newsletter's Hall of Fame. Okay? So yes, you're fucking CM Punk stans. And like I said, it creates this whole dynamic where, you know, you, because you think stan culture is something that's outside of you, you think it's for women or you think it's for gay people or whatever the fuck, it creates like this culture war element to it that just makes, you know, all of your tweets, you know, sound even angrier. So that's the other aspect that I thought was very interesting, is this weird, like, you know, I'm not a stan, those people are stans kind of thing. When you, yes, you very clearly are a CM Punk stan. Otherwise you wouldn't give this much of a shit. But second of all, I don't know if you have anything to add to that part, but it's just like, that is something I thought was very interesting, is the CM Punk stans are convinced themselves they're not actually CM Punk stans. But
I mean, I think anyone except for the most hardcore dedicated fans will not admit to themselves that they are, quote, a stan, because they look and they're like, I am just an objective person who looks at things and this person is objectively a Hall of Famer. This I am an objective fan of this person on their own merits, not because I'm, you know, slightly obsessed in this particular area. And I do think there is a certain type of person who people look at as a stan that is probably relevant to what you just said that I've just never really given that much thought to, because you can certainly see, like, who are the stans and who, you know, who are, like, the kind of derogatory, like, the look down upon kinds of fans, and who are just, like, people who watch stuff or people who like stuff. And it's just something I've never really thought that much about in depth with all of these particular fan bases, other than people, like, complaining about Sasha Banks stans.
Yeah.
And I mostly just think that that's funny because, like, it's not that bad, people. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Some people are replying to you on Twitter. Who cares?
Yeah.
But go ahead.
So I was going to say, so the other part of that that I really wanted to get into, though, is, like, the thing that makes the Naito one specifically so funny to me is you can very easily make an objective case that Tetsuya Naito is an Observer Hall of Famer that has nothing to do with whether or not you like him personally or like his wrestling or like his fans or whatever the fuck. If you just look at his drawing record and his record as a top star in Japan, he is so obviously an Observer Hall of Famer that it was a joke that he wasn't in before now. And nothing. And it's the joke is not that he got in before CM Punk. The joke is that he wasn't already in before 2022. And I'm going to make a little bit of that case right here. I've already made the case a million times on audio and, you know, in articles and stuff. But I'm going to throw some, again, not saying anything about his in-ring wrestling quality, which obviously I'm, you know, very high on. But even if you think he's a bad wrestler, he still should be in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame based on how people vote, you know, based on business and drawing in the past. So I'm going to give you some figures here. First of all,
before you do that, I just want to throw one little musing out there, because I think Naito does have the really strong on paper case. But I think when you just look at them as wrestlers, there are two people on that ballot who are we've talked about on this show who are very, very similar candidates, and the arguments from their fan bases as to why they were underutilized or are legitimate Hall of Famers, and someone else who may have been more pushed and may have been the ace of the company, you know, was owed something by this guy, and it's Naito and CM Punk. Both guys had huge, huge merchandise sales,
yes,
dedicated fan bases.
I'm glad you pointed this out, because I wrote this down. They're the same fucking candidate in a lot of ways.
They are the same candidate, except for one thing. Naito has drawn much bigger houses than CM Punk.
Yes, not even close.
But like, they are the same candidate. The arguments on message boards about them are exactly the same. Them being overlooked, like, Punk may have been more overlooked for a certain amount of time than Naito, but Punk also got their world title for a year. And like, Naito, again, like, was his reign more valuable than Punk, or like the IWGP title more important? I'm sure it was. I mean, because I've never really given half a shit about the WWE title. But like, at the end of the day, they gave him the title for a year, and they gave him a big,
it was like a year
main
and a
event
half,
with The Rock. Yeah,
it was like a year and a half.
Yeah, and like, again, was he second fiddle to Cena with that Rock match? But he still got that match with The Rock, when it was basically only Cena who got the big singles match with The Rock. So he got the big matches. He got the big title reign. Yeah, he was overlooked, but again, so was Naito. And in the end, both guys delivered when they were on top and when they weren't on top. So why are we like angry at Naito getting in and Punk not getting in, as if like one is an outrage and Punk is obviously a better candidate? It's
ridiculous. Well, because they hate Naito fans, and like I said, they like one of them specifically said that. So
yeah, but and at the end of the day, they are Naito fans.
Yes, indeed.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants—they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So I'm going to give some specific stats and figures here that I want to throw out here for Naito. You mentioned drawing. There's one show that I want to highlight, because it's like a very under the radar one, but I think it might, in a weird way, even though the actual headline number might not be his most impressive number. I mean, he's drawn bigger houses. The circumstances around it are like, make it maybe his most impressive drawing ever. And this is this is close to the beginning of his run, November 5th, 2016. So he's a year in to his run as the leader of LIJ. He headlined Power Struggle at the Ideon Arena, Osaka. It was a sellout crowd, 5,050. He was defending the Intercontinental title, not even the heavyweight, so the secondary title, against Jay Lethal, who was a last-minute replacement for Michael. Yeah, he was a last-minute replacement for Michael Elgin, who, you know, suffered an injury. To say Jay Lethal meant nothing to New Japan fans would be like an insult to the term nothing. I mean, they had no idea who this guy was. He had barely been in the company before this. I think he had done like the first Honor Rising or something, if that had already happened. Actually, the first one might be 2017. He had barely been in the company, is the point. He got this title shot. You know, it made sense he got this title shot because he beat Naito on a global, one of those global wars or whatever the fuck. Some Ring of Honor show in Boston, if I remember correctly. So the title shot made sense, but you know, it was a last minute fill in. So Naito is headlining against a man who literally means nothing to these people. He's barely been in the company. He's not a top star from another company. He's just a guy. And the crowd reaction to that match was horrible, because, you know, they had no idea who Jay Lethal was and had no reason to think he was going to beat Naito. And it's not a very good match, but he still fucking sells out the building, even though he's facing Jay Lethal. So to me, that may be his most impressive crowd number of them all. And of course, he has many other ones. You know, he got 30,000 people to pay Wrestle Kingdom prices on a second straight night to see him face Okada on 24 hours notice. He did over 11,000 people. Because again, people like to pretend his title reign was some kind of flop, which is really funny since obviously, you know, the only reason why it didn't draw gigantic houses for a year, for the full year or whatever, is because a fucking novel virus, you know, shut down the entire country of Japan. And still the country that, by the way, still has not really opened, you know, completely, or like dropped all restrictions. But yeah, before the novel coronavirus showed up, he did over 11,000 people against Kenta, a new beginning in Osaka, selling out Osaka Joe Hall, which was easily the best number New Japan did in this entire run for a B show. They had never come close to an 11,000 seat building. They didn't really run many 11,000 seat buildings for B shows. And, you know, this was a huge risk running a building that big for a new beginning show, and they fucking sold it out. And again, Kenta, you know, Kenta, I'm not going to say is Jay Lethal, but it's not Naito Okada either. I mean, that's Naito against a lower level opponent, and they sold out that building. Even if you want to take his COVID era houses into account, he and Evil put almost 5,000 people in a baseball stadium at the fucking height of COVID in August 2020, when most of Japan was completely shut down. There was not even a vaccine yet, and they sold out this limited seating setup for this outdoor show to see Naito win the double titles back from Evil. So there's no argument for Naito not being a draw. It's just that argument does not exist. If you want to look at some more business arguments, when, you know, when Nakamura and AJ Styles left the company at the start of 2016, you were around for that period. I know you were. People were like, is this the end of New Japan? I mean, people freaked the fuck out. And I don't even blame them, because they were losing two of their top stars. Basically, two of the big, at the time, what would have been a big four with Okada and Tanahashi. They were losing half their top four. So, you know, a lot of people were like, is this the end of New Japan? New Japan revenue, at the annual revenue adjusted for inflation and exchange rate, their business year is from summer to summer, basically. I believe it's August to August. So the last full year that Nakamura and AJ were there, they did 2.7 billion yen in annual revenue, which equates to about 24 million. The following year, with Nakamura and AJ out for half the year, and Naito now being pushed as an absolute top star, they grow in revenue to 3.2 billion yen, 28 million. 2017, 4 billion yen, 35 million. 2018, 4.9 billion yen, 44.1 million. 2019, 5.4 billion yen, 50 million. And by the way, those last two numbers are bigger numbers than they ever did in the 1990s. And this is not anyone who can tell you about Japan, this is not an inflation thing. Japan does not have much inflation at all. They were doing higher revenue in 2018 and 2019 than their peak in the 90s. And when they were running all those domes and everything else, you know, 1996, they did 4.1 billion yen in revenue. That was their biggest revenue year in the 90s. So 2018 did a better revenue year than the peak year in the 90s. So, or 2018 and 2019, I should say. So again, they lose two of their top stars in Nakamura and AJ. They push Naito to, at minimum, the 1B spot behind Okada. I don't really even care if you want to argue Okada or Tanahashi is more popular than Naito. I think Naito is more popular, especially if you look at the fan votes and stuff. But at the minimum, you can say he's one of the three most popular guys in the company when they went on a business run that literally eclipsed their revenue in the 1990s. Okay? Their revenue went up when they lost two of their top stars and Naito was pushed as a top star. These are just facts. These are not Naito stands having feelings or talking about match quality or anything. These are just facts of revenue. And guess where a lot of revenue comes from? As you just said before, merchandise. Guess who's been the top merchandise seller every single fucking year since LIJ was formed? Tetsuya Naito. That's not an exaggeration. Go look at the top 10 on the New Japan website. Pretty much any time in the last 6 years, you'll probably see like 8 of the 10 as Naito and LIJ items. Those fucking Naito teddy bears sold to such a ridiculous degree they would sell out every 2 seconds. And they had to make a second model. They made like a second teddy bear, and that teddy bear sold out too. It is incredible how good of a merchandise seller Tetsuya Naito was. And again, these are all just pure hard facts. The company with Naito on top did its greatest revenue in history. And this up until AEW was founded, this was the second biggest wrestling company in the world, not just some podunk company. So to say that the guy who was on top during the second biggest wrestling company in the world's greatest business run in history is not an Observer Hall of Famer is fucking stupid. So if that's what you think, you're fucking stupid.
What I would really love to get an honest answer from a lot of these people who are mad about Naito, and you can't get that honest of an answer because of how his WWE run has gone. But if you were to ask them when they could compare Naito right now versus Nakamura when he went into the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, and to try to make a case that Nakamura is somehow more deserving of being in the Hall of Fame than Naito on any grounds, I would just love to hear that case are we going with work rate? Because
it has to be work. That's the only argument. And I think Naito's a better worker.
I think Naito's a much, much better wrestler than Nakamura, who I've found to be very one dimensional. And as a draw, Nakamura was, in some big houses at the end, but when he was the guy, the company was doing really poorly, and it took him reinventing himself. And I mean, if we look at two guys who reinvented themselves, Naito is a much bigger deal after he reinvented himself business-wise than Nakamura.
And people point out to the failed main event run for Naito. I'm like, this quote-unquote failed main event run for Naito, it was like a year. Like, really, if you look at it, especially with how long he was injured, from how long Naito was actually pushed as a top guy, a Stardust genius, it was like a year total. Okay?
And what was the... what was the dome gate for that show versus the failed Nakamura?
Well, the failed Nakamura. The Tanahashi ones weren't that great. The early Tanahashi ones were not that great. The failed Nakamura domes were not that great. I mean, there are guys who were in the Hall of Fame and should be in the Hall of Fame who had way bigger failure rates than Naito did, or way longer periods of failure before they caught on than Naito did. So that is also an absurd argument. Another argument I wanted to bring up in Naito's favor. So the Tokyo Sports MVP, I'm sure you're aware of it, but for anyone listening who's not aware of it, it's voted on every year by the people who write for this magazine, the Tokyo Sports. I think it's actually like a newspaper, a daily sports newspaper. But whatever it is, they vote on this every year and they give a MVP award for pro wrestling each year. It's a very good indicator of basically who had... It's like kayfabe success is part of it, but they really have to pick somebody who they felt was like super popular that year, and they have a very pragmatic reason to do it, and it's because, they're literally trying to sell newspapers, and they're putting the MVP's picture on the cover. So they have a very pragmatic reason to pick the guy who was just super popular in Japanese wrestling that year. And I'm going to read you the full list of Tokyo Sports MVP multi-time winners, because it's not a very long list. And I'm going basically in chronological order from the first time they won the award, which has been giving out since 1974. Antonio Inoki, 6-time winner. Giant Baba, 2-time winner. Jumbo Tsuruta, 3-time winner. Genichiro Tenryu, 4-time winner. Keiji Budo, 4-time winner. Kenta Kobashi, 2-time winner. Hiroshi Tanahashi, 4-time winner. Kazuchika Okada, 3-time winner. Tetsuya Naito, 3-time winner. Guess what all those people have in common? They're all in the fucking Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of fucking Fame, as they should be, because they're all top stars in Japanese wrestling. Of all those people I just mentioned, only Naito, Inoki, Jumbo, and Tenryu ever won in consecutive years. Naito did it in 16 and 17, which was impressive, considering he wasn't even the IWGP champion in 17, and he was only champion for a few months in 2016, and they're normally very biased towards whoever the champion was. Again, 2019, he won in 2016, 2017, and 2020, not 2019. which he was the champion in 2020, obviously. But yeah, so Naito won it three times, and that's the same number of times Okada as Okada won it. One more time than Giant Baba and Kenta Kobashi. And yes, like, there's a lot of top Japanese stars who did not win this award multiple times. Mitsuhara Misawa only won it once. Shinya Hashimoto only won it once. You know, there are, like this is this idea that Naito is somehow not an MVP, not a Hall of Famer. Like, when you really break it down and look at stuff like that, it just becomes more and more absurd. He clearly was one of the top stars in Japanese wrestling history, and this is another example. So that's why I wanted to point that out, that Tokyo Sports MVP award. Obviously, he won many other awards. He won tons of fan polls. He won Best Bout awards. He won, fan poll awards, like I said. But the Tokyo Sports MVP is an easy one. And, you know, just because it's such a prestigious award in Japan, and he won the thing three fucking times. So, very obviously a Hall of Famer, that Tetsuya Naito. I don't know. Don't know what else to say, really, besides the people who desperately want him to not be a Hall of Famer are just wrong. I guess, do you have anything to add before I move on?
I mean, I think you can, like, look at some of these things and kind of nitpick them, like, oh, wow, you know, Tokyo Sports, whatever. Like, you can nitpick some of these things, like, on their own. But when you look at the quality of the matches, the amount of merchandise he's sold, the amount of fans he's had at his at these shows, the amount of award balloting he gets, it's just like, this guy is so obviously a Hall of Famer. It's just like, it's really, really silly. And I think just the thing that, like, just thinking about Nakamura, it's like, man, yeah, he's such a better candidate than Nakamura. And I really don't think that many people who are interested in this kind of thing would try to argue that Nakamura shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, other than the fact that his WWE run has been a joke.
Yeah, but I think he's one of the more borderline guys for me. I don't know if I would have voted for him at the time he got in. And like you said, his WWE run has definitely not helped his case. So he's probably very lucky he got in the year he did. But
yeah, like, to me, he's someone who, I understand why people voted for him, but I personally think he's very borderline. But I also know that of people who pay that much attention to pro wrestling, I'm one of the lowest in my my value and how much I care about Nakamura. Like, I like most of his matches, or liked most of his matches when he was in New Japan, but like, he wasn't one of my favorites, and I thought he was fairly overrated. But I'm not gonna act like it's a joke that he was in the Hall of Fame when he did, but like, I think if you look at it objectively, and of course we're both being very objective here, like, Naito is just surpasses him as a career. But it's good that Naito went in this year, because I think it's so perfect given some of the previous freakout discourse about Naito that he went in with Ibushi.
Yeah. The man that, like, they tried to, you know, I was there for this, when they tried to murder each other at the Dominion main event, or semi-main for the Intercontinental title. But yeah, Kota Ibushi goes in too. And, you know, the arguments, I'm not going to sit here and say that I personally think he has as strong of a case as Naito, especially on the business side. You know, I just don't, because Naito has, to me, one of the stronger cases, you know, of this era. But he still, Kota Ibushi still drew some big houses. He sold some merchandise. I mean, he was drawing big houses before Naito. He drew them in DDT too. And really, you know, of the people who put that company on the map, it's really just him. It's really him and Don Choku Dino more than anybody. And I don't think very many people would argue that Dino is a Hall of Famer. And Kota Ibushi, you know, deserves a ton of credit for that, for putting this, what was a small indie company, really on the map, especially with his appearances, you know, in other companies, and really getting the DDT name out there that way. I don't remember the exact year, but there was a year where he appeared in this junior tag tournament that Noah put on every year called the Differ Cup. I want to guess it was like 2007 or 8 maybe, but you know, one of those, what, sometime around then. And he really, like, got people to pay attention to DDT, because it's like, well, this guy is amazing. You know, and and this guy is from DDT, so he really, you know, they must be doing some cool stuff there. And, you know, they had, like, him and Kenny, they drew big houses at the Budokan in, like, the early 2010s. So you can't really discount that level of drawing. And then in ring, you know, again, he and Naito are so tied together in ring anyway. You know, they've had so many of their amazing matches are with each other that, you know, there's not a ton of separation there for me. I would prefer Naito. I think most people wouldn't be surprised, but I do think Kota Ibushi is a great in-ring worker, and he's been in so many fantastic matches that I've loved that, like, you know, I definitely think he's an in-ring Hall of Famer. You know, I think where Naito might have him be a little more than the other categories is that positive influence, or I forget the exact wording Dave uses, like historical significance in a positive way, I think is what Dave uses. Mm-hmm. And I do think Naito, you know, between starting LIJ, which really changed the course of New Japan, you know, really, it really shook up what was a very stale unit situation in New Japan at the time. And I think he was a bigger star in New Japan, you know, which and helped them, you know, reach out those revenue goals that we talked about, or those revenue levels we just talked about a little earlier, more than Ibushi did. And Naito took people in the dojo under his wing. You know, who knows if Hiromu Takahashi would even be an active wrestler if it wasn't for Naito. He got people into the company like Shingo and Sanada. So, you know, I think he has more of that historical significance argument than Ibushi does. But, you know, Ibushi has been a positive influence on wrestling too. I mean, he's, you know, the storyline with Kenny has obviously really resonated with people worldwide. So, you know, I think they're both Hall of Famers at the end of the day. And, you know, I voted for both of them. And I, you know, at points it was like, especially when Kenny was on the ballot too, people would like debate the three of them together, you know, Naito, Kenny, and Ibushi. And I was always like, I mean, they're all three of them are Hall of Famers. I don't really see the point in debating which one is the better Hall of Famer. They're all, you know, if Kenny had not already gotten in, I would have voted for him too. I mean, they're all Hall of Famers, so.
I think one thing that always impressed me about Ibushi early on, and I mean, part of it was just seeing him live, but the fact that in, I think it was 2007, maybe it was 2008, but before Ibushi had a really, really big name, Gabe flew him in for four shows in ROH. I think it was, you know, spring of 2007. And at that time, the only big fly-ins they'd done were Kobashi, a bunch of Dragon Gate guys, and Misawa. And that they, you know, were flying this guy in. They didn't treat him as big of a deal as these other guys, but he got this fly-in. Gabe was hyping the hell out of it, and the guy delivered. But then on top of that, the very cheap Mike Quackenbush then flew him in too, before he was like that kind of like top line star in a major Japanese company. And that always like really stood out to me, that this guy is so good and has like this aura to him that like ROH brought him in really early, and then like Quackenbush, who is so freaking cheap, brought him in too. And he worked, you know, obviously the ROH fan base isn't that different from the Shikara fan base, but they are like into different things, and like both raved about him really, really early on before a lot of guys like would figure themselves out. And then from there, like, you know, he took DDT and made it into not what it is today, but like really, you know, got them a lot of momentum and, you know, put them on the map in a way they wouldn't have without him. And then just he did one of the things that like make me a fan of someone for life. He had those matches, that one match especially with Naito, that created the most insane discourse I've ever seen, and even more insane than this Hall of Fame discourse, because people were so mad about that match and thought that match was the scariest, most dangerous thing in the world. There were people who were calling it the worst match of the year because it was so reckless and that they almost killed each other and blah, 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 blah. And just seeing people melt down about what was such a great match, that just really endeared both of them to me in a way that I liked both guys before. I probably liked Ibushi a little bit more before than Naito, but like it just endeared them to me even more because they made a lot of people really, really mad, and they didn't even get injured in the process.
Yeah, they were both fine, which is also a really funny part about it too. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think what I kind of mentioned this earlier, but I think what helped them was, you know, they both get in and they both, you know, they're both tied to each other in a lot of ways. But I think what helped the both of them was very different. So with Ibushi, you know, he obviously had all of his drama with the New Japan office this year, and plus his injuries has been gone for quite a while. And I think people just kind of thought about Kota Ibushi, you know, they, with Ibushi being gone for so long. And I don't think he's actually retired. He's been teasing, actually, that he's going to be back, you know, once his New Japan contract runs out in January, which I hope he is, you know, back wrestling somewhere. But Ibushi being gone for so long, I think gave people a chance to say, you know, oh, if this guy is done, you know, if he never wrestles again, is he a Hall of Famer? Which you don't always get that chance with a guy who's active. So I think it gave people that chance, and they kind of looked at it and they kind of were like, yes, we think he's a Hall of Famer. So that's, I think, what helped Ibushi. With Naito, I think the opposite thing helped him, where, you know, a lot of people in 2021, you know, it looked like Naito was slowing down. He wasn't really a top guy. And people were like, you know, is this, maybe this is the end for him now. And then Tetsuya Naito this year goes out there and has two amazing matches with Kazuchika Okada in the first half of the year for the IWGP World Heavyweight title. And then he goes out there and has two more amazing matches in the second half of the year with Will Ospreay in the G1 semifinal, and then for the U.S. title at Battle Autumn. And, you know, I think that helped him. I think it was like, well, look, he's still having these awesome matches. He's putting guys over. It's not like he's, you know, he ended up losing to Okada both title matches and lost both those matches to Ospreay too. So he's, you know, having this very unselfish run where he's just putting guys over and, you know, putting on these big, these amazing matches in the main events. So for Naito, I just think having this little bit of a mini resurgence in ring probably helped get him over the line with some people who were like, oh, I don't know, is this Naito guy still at that level? So that, you know, it's very opposite things, I think, that helped the two of them and their candidacies. But I just thought that was interesting, just like the way they were probably helped in almost opposite directions.
So I was quickly looking at his match guide for this year for on Cage Match, and I think the strongest argument for him is a work rate candidate. I see I have not followed New Japan that much this year, but Gato versus Naito, 3 stars. I mean, that sounds like a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, he had a really good year this year, so you know, just,
I mean, maybe he could do 2 stars with Jado.
Yeah, who even knows? But yeah, I mean, the last time I checked, that the second Ospreay match was at a 4.6 average on Grapple, you know, which is funny since obviously a lot of the people complaining about this are from Grapple Island over there.
You mean the people who thought that David Starr was the only good wrestler?
Yes, the last honest wrestler, David Starr, that guy. But yeah, so there you go. I think we've kind of made our case here, and I know you've got plans at 8 o'clock here, so we can wrap this thing up. Anything we want to say about any of the, oh, there's the people coming on the bout next year. Let's quickly mention that. So I know we have Seth Rollins, Seth freaking Rollins, I should say, John Moxley, the Young Bucks, and the Beauty Pair, Jackie Sato, and actually no, I think he got this wrong. Everybody said. He had the wrong Beauty Pair. I think the Beauty Pair is actually getting, I think it's actually Jackie Sato and Maki Ueda, not Sato and whoever the hell he had here. But the point is, they're going to be on the bout. That'll be an interesting one to really dive into. I know they were like a, you know, they were like kind of the first big Joshi stars in Japan. And, you know, they were like, they very much trailblazed when it came to, you know, being like Joshi and music stars at the same time. But you know, their peak was very short but very high, and you know, very much a pop culture phenomenon. So that'll be cool to look into. There's like apparently a surprising amount of Beauty Pair footage out there for an act that was, you know, active in the period they were active in. So that will be a really interesting one to really dig into for next year's bout. I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Oh, that's gotta be fun to watch given what like those crowds were like.
Yeah. Seth freaking, I do not see a case for freaking. I'm sorry.
Like that will be an interesting one just for like who people will vote for based on getting a push in WWE. And I mean, for the most part, the last few, since he got fiended, he hasn't even gotten like that big of a, like the WWE Hall of Famer push that you would expect.
Yeah.
And like, man, I obviously don't watch these shows, but you see enough GIFs and video clips of these characters, and like everything you see of Rollins, it just really sucks.
Yeah.
It just really, really sucks. And like, I'm curious, like, because he feels like someone who should be getting like 15% of the vote, but maybe he just, you know, gets like 30.
Yeah.
Or, and then
maybe
like,
maybe he just drops off.
That would be, I don't think he's like,
yeah,
that bad of a case. Cause again, like he's been a pushed guy in WWE, and I'm sure if you string together some numbers, you can find something resembling a case. Like, I just, like, for me, he's just like become this wrestler that like, I just don't want to see do anything. Like if he were to come to AEW, I'd be like, man, I could see it working. Cause again, I liked him in Ring of Honor, but, and like, maybe you put him in a different environment, but like, I can't see that working. And, but again, like I would have, when Moxley came in, I was like, well, you know, Moxley will be like that great promo guy who has those kind of like maybe 3.5-star matches that like, I'm not really excited for the match, but I'm really excited for the build. And instead he's like, I'm just going to have these like bloody 4+ star matches like against like cool opponents, and just I'm just a great wrestler. And I did not see him as that when he came into AEW. So again, maybe with Rollins, it's just bad booking, but yeah, he just feels like nothing. Moxley will be interesting, because like when I really cared about the Hall of Fame, I'd be like, yeah, Moxley's kind of like a step below that. Like he's made like a minor difference. Like he's definitely like a really good wrestler. You know, there are some shows he's been on that drew really well, but you know, there's obviously like people in AEW who draw better than him. And like, he's been a part of this cold period the last few months, but I mean, people really like him. And then, I mean, it feels like if the Bucks don't get in first ballot, then like
so you just named the next, the other two candidates are John Moxley and the Young Bucks. Moxley, I can't see myself voting for next year. I need a few more years of him at this level in AEW, because I just don't think his WWE run means anything to me at all. Kind of what you said, like, I did not like him in WWE at all. I mean, it's not even a thing like Roman where I can say I liked Roman's in-ring, even though obviously the booking and everything else about WWE is terrible, where I did not like Moxley's in-ring as Dean Ambrose at all. So I was as surprised as anybody that he had awesome matches in AEW and New Japan. But yeah, I just need a few more years than 3 years, you know, like get me to 5 or something. Like, I had to listen to people argue that 4 and 5 and 6 was not enough for Naito as a top guy. So yeah, I'm not really ready to put in Moxley after 3 years. But
I mean, with Moxley, he does have the Shield, where I feel like if you're giving it to Roman, you have to put some like outsized influence on the Shield in terms of like his ability to work and draw, because
true.
He's been like when he came back to SmackDown and did this heel run, SmackDown was like, it was sinking in the ratings, like, and it just stabilized. It went to like its demos were like 0.5 to 0.55 for like a year straight. Yeah. And since then, like, since he started going part-time, it's been like a little bit softer. There have been ups and there have been downs since Vince left, but like, it's been a little bit softer since then. But he had a good year plus where, you know, he meant something in their ratings, and their ratings are what makes them their money. So as like horrible as I thought that like early stuff was, like the last WWE match I've watched in full was someone was complaining about the setup for the Hell in a Cell match with I think it was Jey Uso. And someone linked me to a stream. I put it on and it was just the worst acted melodramatic shit I've ever seen. And it was like, that was the worst match and I saw all year. And I just could not believe that people were going nuts over it. And like the recent stuff to me, like, feels so much like Hogan in 98 in the NWO Black and White, except like Roman Reigns isn't nearly as charismatic as Hulk Hogan and isn't nearly as insane. So it's just like, it comes off more as like a bad mafia parody, but like people are at least into it. So like, I'll give them that. Like,
yeah,
people are into it. Like, even if like it seems like SmackDown's gotten a little bit softer and like he doesn't have that kind of cachet where, you know, when they put him on Raw and like it doesn't mean anything. Like right after that hour with no commercials, they did a Roman match and like it, or a Roman segment, and like it just died. And again, like, yeah, they just ended the no commercial segment of the show. But at the same time, if this guy is the Hall of Fame head of the table difference maker, then you'd think it would at least, you know, hold steady and then fall off a cliff. But whatever.
But yeah, the Young Bucks, obviously Hall of Famers. I mean,
just... like if they're not, then like, man, like an observer star rating means absolutely nothing anymore. And like, because they are the team that has, you know, really brought about the modern era of kind of like indie work rate and like what AEW is, like these kind of like it's hard to describe what they were, but their like Elite / Bullet Club gimmick really just changed what Ring of Honor was in like 2015 and took it from this like product that was so cold with Jim Cornette to something that like was legitimately like doing really well for like ROH's level in terms of selling tickets. And then AEW comes around and I'm like, okay, yeah, ROH is doing like 1500 to 3000 for their big shows now. How are you gonna do, like, why are you starting a new company instead of just like buying ROH when, you know, you're going to be splitting that fan base in half? Like, yeah, maybe with more money you can do that $1,500 to $3,000 or 3,000 people for big shows, but what are you doing every week? Are you just going to be TNA? And then like, yeah, that company's completely completely made those thoughts look silly, and they're obviously, I can't deny them being by far my favorite company, but yeah, like they are like one of the catalysts of that. And so it feels like if they're not Hall of Famers, then I mean, like, no one from the non-WWE part of this US hot period or whatever you want to call it is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I think we can wrap it up there.
Go Mystico.
Thank you. Go Mystico. Thank you again for coming on, especially so last minute. Had a lot of fun with my first podcasting appearance in 11 months. Hope I wasn't too rusty.
And we didn't even read all of the mean tweets, so.
Yeah. I think we did show good restraint there. We only did a couple mean tweets.
Yeah, I had one pulled up that I was going to make fun of. But
go ahead, please. Okay. The floor is yours.
I won't mention the person, even though I think they're a terrible, terrible account. Kota Ibushi and Tatsuya Naito making the WON Hall of Fame before CM Punk is insane to me, quite frankly. So that's the first in this thread. And then we get to someone saying, they're saying, okay, a couple things. I was reminded that they're in separate categories. I have no problem with anyone thinking they're Hall of Famers or better than Punk straight up. Three, this conversation has only continued. Buddy, you started the conversation by saying the idea that they made it in before Punk is making you or is insane to you, quite frankly. And then he just continues this thread from there. And finally, what do we get to at the end? There was a vote on Benoit. If Benoit should be taken out after murdering his son, and they elected to keep him in because he was a great wrestler. I can go on and on. The idea that Punk is a horrible human that should be punished for talking shit and getting into a fight is preposterous. Which, again, as we've shown during the show, the idea that that's why what he was being punished for, or that he was punished at all, is preposterous. And the other thing that I should say is more people voted to take Benoit out of the Hall of Fame than thought CM Punk was a Hall of Famer. So,
that is true.
So more people thought that it was bad that he murdered his son than thought Punk was a Hall of Famer. Do with that what you will.
Yeah. Because it got like, what, like 54%, I think, and it needed to get 60%.
Yeah, it was like 54 or 55. Like, it was like right in like that like mid-50s. So, you know, it almost happened.
Yeah. I kind of think if they did that again, he would come out this time, but maybe I'm wrong.
Probably just because it's like, I don't even know. Like, there's so many people who just like are so... And because of how the voter base has changed, I do think he would probably go out because a lot of like those new fans and new podcasters like do think it's like... like horrible to think that anything Benoit ever did was good, which I'm not like against that position. Like I do think it's funny when Jericho can't keep himself from from phrasing a Benoit thing, But I will say that we can wrap up on this point to go into Benoit a little bit. I saw Darlene Love's Christmas show last week. And Darlene Love was a singer in the early 60s who was basically a star because of Phil Spector's Christmas album. And during the show, she brings up Phil Spector and the crowd boos. And all she says is, "I don't have anything bad to say about Phil Spector." And all I could think about was, you know what? Chris Jericho just needs to try that. They're both murderers.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. All right. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
I don't have a podcast. Well, there might be a podcast happening soon. So if you follow me already at Mongo_ebooks, there might be a new podcast soon. If you don't follow me, you're probably going to be annoyed by my tweets and my incessant quote tweeting of people. So don't bother. There hope you enjoyed the show, though.
Yes, I hope you enjoyed the show. As far as me, you know, I'm around on Twitter. You know, you can very easily find me. I never say my Twitter handle out loud because it's embarrassingly stupid. But I mostly tweet about hockey nowadays, so you got to be ready for a lot of like, "That wasn't a penalty," or "What a goal" type tweets. So if you like those tweets, you'll definitely want to follow me. If not, maybe you don't want to at this point. We might be back at some point. I don't know. Maybe I've now established a precedent of releasing a random episode when I feel like it. So maybe we'll do something at some other point. If this is it, though, this is the last time I ever record a podcast. I want to thank you for listening, as always. I want to thank you for listening to many other past episodes of me rambling on and hopefully making something resembling a point through all my rambling. But yes, sincerely, thank you. I love like the amount of people that have asked me, and again, this is going to sound like I'm bragging, which I guess I kind of am, but the amount of people who have asked me when the podcast is coming back during the course of this year has blown me away, and it's very humbling. So thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this one-off return, and maybe there will be more in the future. But again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you whenever we see you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.